KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, we talk with religious leaders from Sonoma County about how their faiths are helping them and their members make sense of the historic wildfires affecting so many lives. 6,000 homes and businesses destroyed, 42 lives lost, and 27 who remain missing. And we want to hear from you. What are the messages or rituals that have brought you comfort in times of upheaval? Join us next on Forum after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Joining us for this hour of Forum are faith leaders in Sonoma County who've been personally affected by the wildfires in the region, as well as providing support to those who've lost homes, jobs, as well as loved ones. And let me tell you who they are. Joining us is Dale Flowers. He's a pastor at the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Rosa. Good morning, Dale Flowers. Thanks for joining us. Also with us is Mandeep Nagra. He is an active volunteer and spokesperson for the Sikh Temple of Santa Rosa. Good morning, Mandeep Nagra.
Good morning.
And also with us is George Gittleman. He's a rabbi at the Congregation Shomrei Torah in Santa Rosa. And good morning to you, Rabbi Gittleman.
Good morning.
And Rachel Boughton joins us. She's a Roshi and director of the Santa Rosa Creek Zen Center. Good morning, Rachel Boughton.
Hi.
Well, Rabbi George Gittleman, I'd like to start with you. I'd like to hear just your personal experience of this, that you were evacuated three times, I understand it.
Right. The first time we self-evacuated, so it was really windy, and the wind woke up my spouse, Laura Gittleman. She, about like 1:30, maybe 2 in the morning, she went outside, could see the fires coming from Calistoga our way. Got me out of bed, and by the time I got out into the courtyard of the neighborhood we live in, most of our neighbors were all staring at the fire. And so we didn't wait to be evacuated. We realized we needed to get out of there, and we did pretty quickly. We evacuated to the synagogue, and then I opened up the synagogue so that anyone who needed a place to go to could go there. Then we moved back because we weren't forced to evacuate, and then we were evacuated again, this time we weren't forced to evacuate, but it was recommended that we leave. And then we went back the next night, and then we were forced to evacuate, and then we couldn't get back in, I think, for 4 or 5 days.
How many members of your membership were displaced by these fires at your synagogue?
Well, we serve about 450 families, and I'm going to guess that three-quarters of the membership was displaced, was evacuated by the fires.
Wow. And 30 families or so lost their homes?
30 families lost their homes, and one longtime member, a past president of the congregation, lost her life.
I'm very sorry to hear that. And this is somebody who has not been named yet, though, in my understanding is. Have they actually been identified at this point? Or
No, she's presumed gone by the fire. I think that the challenge is the fire was very hot, and the challenge is to find some confirming remains.
Mandeep Nagra, your experience, you were also very, very close to these fires as well.
Yes, we were in the middle in the Fountain Grove area. So in my neighborhood, the private street we live on, it's a gated community of about 21 home houses. Only 7 survived. We were the lucky ones that survived. We were evacuated, mandatory evacuation, for the longest time.
Dale Flowers, with the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Rosa, your church, I think, is probably one of the hardest hit among the members of this panel, where you had 49 members of your church who lost homes?
That's correct. We just learned yesterday of one more. So we have 50, and then connected to our church is the Presbyterian preschool, of which there's 10 additional families who have also lost their homes.
I'm sorry to hear that. I understand that you've seen a lot of people coming to the church nowadays who weren't even members initially.
Yes. Whenever a tragedy of this sort happens, our worship tends to bring people who want to, they want community, and they have this strong sense of God that they want to be in worship.
Well, Rachel Boughton, you wrote a blog post about your experience trying to evacuate from the fires and having to leave a couple of sheep behind. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. We have a couple of Jacob's sheep who are pretty. They've got four horns and they're pretty self-sufficient. But I felt for them because they, you know, I couldn't decide. I needed to either open the gate and let them potentially run on the road, or leave them where they were and hope for the best. So,
and what I found interesting about your story is that you called 911 when you saw the flames. It's not like somebody was telling you to evacuate.
Yeah, my phone is still my Seattle phone number, and I don't know. I think some of the neighbors came down the road to the side of us around 3 a.m., and I think maybe my dogs heard, and my dogs were alerting me during the night that it was probably a good idea to pay attention, but I was desperately trying to hold on to sleep. So it was until the smoke became, I think humans don't really like to sleep through the smell of smoke.
How does the Zen practice help you understand and process this experience? What is...
It was interesting afterwards because I was thinking I should write something, but I didn't feel like I really could preach to anybody. But the one thing that came to me was Zen practice is about being in this moment, and that means not judging what you're experiencing. So there's no right way to do this. There's no wrong way to do this. Sometimes you'll feel one way, sometimes you'll feel another. You don't have to have been more devastated than someone else. You don't have to be less. You don't have to take it easily. You don't have to, you know, so that just being able to have the experience you have is pretty grounding, and also leads to compassion, which I think also leads to being able to reach out and help other people.
Rabbi Gittleman, does that ring true to you, to just not telling people what to think, but just allowing them to have their own experience?
Certainly. I don't think we can say anything that's going to make this fire and what it did okay. I think probably the greatest gift we can give people is a compassionate presence, to listen to their story, to let them know that we care, also to share. In some ways, we're all traumatized, so not to make a distinction, like I'm the rabbi and therefore my experience is different from yours. So to also connect that we have similar experiences and we're all together struggling to get through, and that's precisely how we'll get through this together as a community.
When people came together for the first time, you know, what was your message or sentiment that you shared at your synagogue?
My message was more not so much about message, but about presence, that this is what community is for, that together we're going to be okay, that we care. And we basically tried to create a place where people could talk and be heard. And then in terms of the worship, the worship was also around being thankful that we're alive and recognizing that together we're going to get through this crisis.
Pastor Flowers, did you make adjustments to the format of what you would normally do on Sundays after this tragedy?
Yes, we did. I work with a team when we plan worship together, and one of the things we determined we needed was to give people a chance to experience community, not just in a structured worship format, but just after that to be together, tell their stories. It seemed like there were more hugs that day than I've ever seen before. So we reduced our worship by, it's normally an hour, and we made it intentionally 45 minutes long so that it was followed by a hot breakfast that people could go into our fellowship hall and sit down and be in community together and tell their stories.
What was your service like? What when you were giving your part of it, what did you say?
Well, my colleague, Pastor Brenna Hesch, was the one who gave the message that day, and I did the pastoral prayer and was the worship leader. I spoke of the fact that our lives are on tilt, our world is different than the world around us, and that we're having to adjust to that, that we are experiencing life in a different way than we normally do. And in fact, I spoke of the fact that we probably won't see normal for some time. While we're returning to routines, nothing feels normal again. And just driving through our community, everywhere I go, I just have this sense of, oh no.
And yet, you mentioned Brenna Hesch. She was talking about hope in some ways.
Yes, she did. She spoke of the Mount St. Helens eruption, and at first I thought, wow, that's going a long way, and both in distance and time, and yet it was just right because it gave, instead of speaking to the rawness of our present moment, it helped us see something that occurred that was equally devastating some time ago, and yet the recovery has happened. And so she spoke of the sense of hope that recovery would come.
Rachel Bowden, I was struck by the cone that you put on the piece where you were describing what happened to you. Can you say what that cone was and why that one seemed to fit?
So the koans are this little Zen device for meditation and insight. And there are all sorts of things, often bits of a conversation where somebody said something that was just a little off kilter and made you think or change the way you look at things. So this one is a story where the Zen teacher says, asks two people to roll up the blinds. To monks, and the monks do so, they do it in exactly the same way. And the master looks at them and says, one gains, one loses. And that goes with a lot of different experiences, but I felt like I understood it more deeply as a result of having my particular situation. I called the piece Living at the Corner of Lucky and Unlucky, because my house was the place where the Presley fire jumped the road. And it jumped the road into our front yard and burned our front porch and toasted our front door and was stopped by people who I don't know, but I'm extremely grateful to. And I wanted to say that through the koan that you don't, there's no virtue that saves you. There's no vice that dooms you, that we just get the life we have. And like someone asked me, oh, was it the cement buildings that survived and the wood ones that burned? And it was like, no, it was what's what the fire wanted to do. You know, the fire took down Angela Center, which is our retreat center, and it looks pretty impermeable. It's an old nunnery built of cement blocks, you know, and what the fire wants, the fire takes.
So there was some comfort in the randomness of it all in an odd way.
Yeah, because that's the way life is, you know, and sometimes we forget and we think we can earn the right to be immortal, but, you know, the world's made to come down, and that's kind of sweet, actually, because then we love each other more and we experience how much we care and also what we care about.
Rachel Bowden is a Roshi and director of the Santa Rosa Creek Zen Center. We're also joined by Rabbi George Gittleman. He is with the congregation Shomrei Torah. Am I saying that correctly, Rabbi?
You're doing very well.
Thank you. Well. Congregation Shomrei Torah in Santa Rosa, where about 30 members lost their homes and one member is presumed dead. We're also talking with Dale Flowers. He's the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Rosa, where 50 of its members have lost homes. And we're joined by Mandeep Nagra, an active volunteer and spokesperson for the Sikh Temple of Santa Rosa, where about 10 families lost their homes. And Mandeep Nagra, one of the things that you have been talking about is how it in the Sikh community, one of the big things that people take pride in is community service in these disasters.
Yes. I was overwhelmed to see people calling the Sikh temple and asking for whatever kind of help. And they did come, some sent, some of them, after we told them the county doesn't need supplies at this time because they have too many, the shelters are full of supplies. They called the Salvation Army Santa Rosa, and they brought two big semis, goods worth $28,000. And other than some other day, somebody bought pizzas. The first day, the L.C. Allen School opened the shelter the morning of the 9th. As soon as our volunteers found out, they ordered pizzas and they took pizzas. And that was so welcomed by the people because at that time, it was just the beginning. And, you know, these people of the 10 families that lost the house, including the president of our Sikh Gurdwara, they, because they know these people are affluent, they're well off, nobody asked if they needed anything. They wanted to go to the shelters. They wanted to reach out to the poor people, the labor on the vineyards and stuff like that. I was overwhelmed to see overwhelming response. I think for the first time, Santa Rosa Sikh Temple or Santa Rosa came on the map. Of entire California.
And, you know, when I say that you're a spokesperson for the temple, you translate, is that right, for, you know, what the Baba Ghi says at the temple, is that right?
We do have an app that, you know, it has translation, transliteration, all those things, and I, out of my own interest, I do a projection.
I see.
Yeah, I go to high schools, we talk about Sikhism. You know, I take a lead. I've joined. Whenever we go for homeless shelters or any places, I do actively participate, you know, and people sort of, you know, we motivate each other.
And what was the Baba Ghi's message?
Yes. So there was no special message other than, you know, everybody was moved to see the destruction. Everybody had compassion, love for each other, you know, so... In Sikhism, we always believe that it happens by Almighty's will. Everything happens as He wishes. And also the second thing big in Sikhism is, you know, always stay positive. Mm. So we go back and remember these things, you know, and console each other, help each other, you know.
Well, we're reflecting on the wildfires and the recovery process with faith leaders in this hour forum. And I'd like now to invite our listeners to join the conversation. What thoughts or questions do you have for our guests today? Is your faith helping you cope in the wake of the North Bay fires? And if so, please tell us how. And if you're not active in a religious or spiritual practice, where are you finding comfort? The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can post them on Facebook. You can tweet us at KQED Forum, and you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Rabbi Gittleman, we just had an hour where we were talking about those who lost their lives in the fire. And of course, you know, one of the members of your synagogue is presumed dead as well. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about the framework for how Judaism approaches death.
Judaism, I think, is wise when it comes to death. We, rather than our culture, which is death averse, Judaism teaches that you should face death head on, that remembering the dead, mourning, having religious rites of passage are important. So, and by the way, I think this is the framework that we're all going through, whether we lost a home or not, or whether we lost a loved one or not. All of us in Sonoma County are going through a framework of loss, grief, and mourning, as if someone or something died. So Judaism says the most difficult time is the first week after you lose somebody, and in that week you really shouldn't be expected to do very much. The community will take care of you, and your job is simply to be with your feelings. And then the next 30 days are considered also to be an intense time of mourning, but you're hopefully can get back to a somewhat normal life in the next 30 days, avoiding things that would be really disjunctive for your experience, like parties or celebrations. And then the mourning cycle, according to Jewish tradition, goes for another 11 months. So that basically is almost a year is given into the cycle of mourning. Now, you're supposed to return back to life, but the message is that, you know, it's just not, doesn't go away right away. You don't
you don't heal, but over time, and even after the year cycle, there's still ways in Jewish tradition that every year you remember the death. It's called a Yahrzeit Seder, anniversary of the death, and then we have a service called Yisker, where we remember the dead. So our tradition believes that you should keep faith with those who sleep in the dust, and also that you need to, that mourning's an important and natural, healthy part of life. The only other thing I would say is that it also has you do a lot of this in community so that you don't fall into your, because there's a narcissism to mourning that can be unhealthy. So there's a container that says, yes, you need to mourn, but also there are limits to it so that you don't get lost in your grief.
Hmm. I thought it was also interesting that you highlighted to our producer when you were talking with her before this show that it can be disconcerting that the world keeps going, but you slow down, that you felt that was an important point to make.
Right, and that's not so much to do with Jewish tradition, but what happens when we mourn or we have a loss. I think anyone who's had a loss of one kind or another recognizes that you have a spiritual flu. You're not able to function like you normally do, but the world just is indifferent, and it just keeps going, and that's often irritating and very difficult, and you find yourself surprised that you were actually able to live in that world. Because at the moment, at least, you're not able to do it. It's both hurtful and disconcerting at the same time. And as you come through your mourning, then you're able to function better, and you're able, for better or for worse, re-enter that really fast pace that most of us live through.
Pastor Flowers, I Rabbi Gittleman had mentioned earlier loss, including just the loss of a home, and you really have some perspective on what it means to lose a home.
Well, I've noticed that it disrupts everybody's life, and while people might not be materialistic about their homes, when I hear them speak of it, they nevertheless, that is their place of belonging, their place of rest, and it's the place where they're oriented to their daily life. And when that's gone, while there's others who take them in or they find another place, it takes a while for that to become a new home for them. And so many who came either to our church seeking shelter or would come during the day or would come on Sunday spoke of this being home for them. It was a place of belonging and a place of orientation and community that they shared. And I think that's a significant thing. When someone loses their home, they lose more than belongings.
Right. They lose that place of safety, as you highlight. Pastor Dale Flowers of the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Rosa, where some 50 of its members lost their homes. Again, if you'd like to call and join the conversation with your thoughts or questions for our guests, or to share how faith is helping you cope, or just where you're finding comfort, the number is 866-733-6786. The email address is forum@kqed.org, and the website is kqed.org/forum. We'll have more after the break. I'm Nina Kim. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. As people grapple with the destruction and losses from the Northern California wildfires, some are seeking out their local churches, temples, and other places of worship for guidance and comfort. And in this hour of Forum, we're talking to leaders of different faiths or practices about how people are navigating the recovery process. And we want to hear from you what role your religion or spiritual practice is playing in terms of understanding this disaster and getting through the recovery. And right now, we're joined by Sama Hussein, who is president of the Islamic Society of Santa Rosa. Good morning, Sama Hussein. Hi, Sama Hussein, are you there?
Here, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So I understand you're the president of the Islamic Society of Santa Rosa, and I'm wondering how your members are doing.
Well, they're doing the best they can given the circumstances. Everyone was impacted in one way or the other with this fire, as you know. Of course, some more than others. But they're doing the best they can given the circumstance.
And the Imam's message afterwards was that in some ways this fire can be seen as a trial of sorts. Can you explain what he meant by that?
Yeah, these natural disasters in the religion, they're looked at as trials that come for for many reasons, actually. One of which is to remind the people that there's only one God that has created everything and has control over everything, and also he is in charge of everything, and that people are helpless without his help. So these disasters, as painful as they are, they actually come with mercy within their fold. They carry gifts within their fold. So, for example, what that means is that we all saw how people got closer to each other when the fire disaster hit. They've become like one big family. They forgot about their differences and their prejudices. They worked together. They were generous to one another. The selfishness was all of a sudden just gone. And also the other thing that came within the folds of this trial is the compassion that prevailed in the society during the fire trial. It was really heartfelt. You could see it in people's eyes and in their actions. You could feel their sincerity. The sincerity was just overflowing off their faces and actions. So people realized all of a sudden what matters and what does not matter. They realized that there are more important things than the vanity and the lusts that the society is consumed in. And this is what I mean by a gift in the fold of the trial. Mm. The trials come to remind us of so many things, that there's a God to this universe, and that we're really vulnerable. We can't stop these disasters when they come, but they also bring us together and remind us of who we are and the obligations that we have towards God.
Osama Hussein, he's president of the Islamic Society of Santa Rosa. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we're also hearing from some of our listeners. I'll go to Lisa in Brisbane. Hi, Lisa. Oh, I'm sorry. I think we have lost the connection with Lisa. Let's go next to Danielle in Redwood City. Hi, Danielle.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'm calling. I was compelled. I've been listening to a little bit of your last hour as well as this. And I'm in my late 30s and never really had, other than in my very early childhood, a connection to the church. But recently, for different reasons in the last year, I have since joined a church. And I guess I'm calling in to make the appeal to what I think is true for many of us in the Bay Area. We often retreat to our intellectualism, our academia, as opposed to our spiritual side. In times of crisis or frustration or emotional despair. And so just for any of those folks who might be listening out there who feel that the church or faith is distant from them, it really doesn't have to be. And there's a great deal of comfort that can come from it. Yes, I do think that there can be some awkwardness about the rituals and the different language that comes from a church community. But over time, when you begin to get in the fold of that, there really is a great settling that can happen and a silencing and a way that sort of moves the person through an experience. And so I guess, you know, again, just the appeal, if you're on the fence, if you're at all thinking about it, either because of the result of the fires or any of the other great tragedies and challenges that we're facing in our society today, I encourage you to find a church near your home, reach out. I also find that there are, as I was shopping around, as an, probably an academic researcher would do, I was looking for a right spot for me. They were all the churches that I went to were very welcoming of people who were not part of the community. They really made the awkwardness and the unfamiliarity very comfortable to deal with. So,
well, Danielle, I thank you for sharing that. And I think we get you're underscoring a lot of what other people were saying, you know, Pastor Flowers, about how people were saying his church was now home to them because of its sense of safety and nourishment. I'd like to go next to Lisa in Brisbane. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hey, yeah, I'd just like to share that my house burned down in 1999 here in Brisbane.
Mm.
And what it was very traumatic. It was like watching a car wreck with all your family in it, you know, going up in flames. It's just so people don't understand how what it's like to lose everything, you know. But I got to say what got me through it was two things. My Quaker community in the city, shout out to them because they hunted me down and made sure I had pajamas that night, you know, and just, and my boss who gave me a place to live immediately, just gave me a house, said here, live in it. And just Brisbane really came forward. The Lions Club threw a spaghetti feed and raised money for me. Even though I was well insured, they just wanted to make sure I knew that they supported me. And, a friend gave me a really beautiful journal. This is really wonderful about friends. She took me out and she said, here's a really beautiful book, and I want you to write down all of the dreams you have for your future home. What's it going to look like? You know, what do you really want to put in it? And how do you see rebuilding? You know, just write down your dream. And I'm an artist, and it was like, oh, my gosh, this so helped me, you know, kind of move through it. And I did. I started writing down my thoughts, and it helped me get through the trauma of get through the trauma of the whole thing and move through it. But I got a shout out to Brisbane because they helped me move through the permit process really fast. Everyone at City Hall and just my neighbors.
Well, thanks, Lisa, for that. You're reminding us that our government community can also play a big role in making this harder or easier on us. Rabbi Gittleman, in terms of listening to Lisa and Danielle's comments earlier, have you put your finger on what it is that just creates that something different, that sense of something different when you're amid a spiritual community?
Sure. Well, I think for one thing, you have a place to go to. So when the fires hit, people didn't know where to go, but they instinctively knew that if the synagogue was open, they could be there. The other thing is that a religious community also has a framework for the experience you're going through. So loss is a major part of our experience. Well, we know how to work with loss. Our ancestors have walked through the valley of the shadow many times and come out the other side. So you may not come regularly or even be that comfortable with synagogue, but you know that if you're Jewish and you really need to be in your religious community, you can show up and often get what you need there. And then for those that are really the fabric of the community, it's, you know, for better and for worse, it's an extended family. It's not always a functional family, but it is an extended family. So when times are tough, what I've experienced over and over again is we come together. We on some gut level know and trust each other and can therefore be there for each other in a vulnerable way, you know, really show up.
Well, let's hear now from Mark in San Jose. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I wanted to say that I've heard a lot of people talking about relying on religion, and I'm somebody that was seriously damaged for my entire life by my childhood experience with fundamentalist religion.
Mm.
And I found that moving to my rational side and starting to believe in science and things that can be proven and rather than magic to solve our problems helps me take responsibility for my life and make it better and make me more involved in the community at large and not separate me into some smaller group. So I would just encourage people to find any kind of spiritual practice that works for them. But if they're going to join a church or start going to church or synagogue or a mosque, not to go someplace where they have to give up their basic beliefs about who people are and what we are and what we're doing here, and not have to require them to believe in any kind of magic or a miracle occurs, because we know really that that doesn't happen that way and that we have to take responsibility for us and our planet because no one else will.
Well, Mark, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. And Rachel Bouton, Zen, for example, is a practice more than a religion or a belief, right? You see it that way.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, there are beliefs inherent in the idea that we can pay attention and be in this moment. And that's something that when I say there's no beliefs, then I have to look again and say, oh, yes. But yes, when I'm feeling I'm suffering, I do bring myself back to here. I do bring myself back to this moment. And it's interesting to hear what, was it Mark said about science? I think science is, in a way, it's its own religion, and it's got its own comforts and it has its own miracles, which are inside this moment, which, you know, as you pay attention deeper and deeper, you realize that even a fire like that is a miracle. It's amazing. We have no way of comprehending the fire. You know, the climate changes and suddenly we have a fire that travels at 100 feet a second, they said. What is that? And then we can find actually resonance in our own self to the power of that. And I think it actually, it can go from attention to the ability to look beyond what we've been doing to what we really want. And some of that stuff that we saw around ourselves become ashes starts to teach us, oh, it's worthwhile to think what I care about, because everything can disappear like that. And there's some strength in that, too.
Well, Bodhi writes, I'm a member of Rabbi Gittleman's congregation. I was so impressed that the day after the fire, he conducted a bat mitzvah. Is that right, Rabbi Gittleman?
Yeah, I think 2 days. Might have been 2 days after the fire. You know, life, in as much as it can go on, it goes on. And the Jewish people have certainly been through much worse. And they didn't stop being Jewish then, so I didn't feel a reason to stop then. The young woman, a 13-year-old girl who had her bat mitzvah, she worked long and hard to prepare, and her family had also. And they first came and said, we're going to cancel. And I said, no, don't cancel. Maybe change the way you celebrate. It'll be a little more somber in celebration, but we're going to still have services, and she's ready to go. Let's have this bat mitzvah. And it was a gift to everybody that was there. We were in the midst of a disaster, and we were all pretty shocked, but to have something that brought us together in a positive way and to celebrate with this 13-year-old young woman was really a gift.
Pastor Flowers, one of the things that we're hearing a lot about in Santa Rosa in particular is that is the concern that people will leave the area and not come back, people who have lost homes. And I'm wondering what your sense is among your congregants about what their plans are.
Yes, we've tried to stay in contact with all of them. We are doing that on a weekly basis, as well as both in writing and phone calls. We're aware of 2 out of the 50 that for sure are leaving the area. And then others have relocated. Housing is the biggest challenge in our community. I have heard reports that we were 2.5% vacancy rate prior to the fire, and it decimated another 5% of housing in Santa Rosa. So that means it's going to be very difficult for people to find places to live. And we've had people relocate to the East Bay, and a family is in Fort Bragg, another in Bakersfield. And so the question becomes, will they migrate back? Will they rebuild? Will they try to buy a home? How many homes would be available? So it is of great concern, because you lose their contribution to our community, and the life we shared together is not going to be the same without them.
Mandeep Nagra of the Sikh Temple of Santa Rosa, this is a question you're grappling with right now, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, I've heard people, just because it's a sort of traumatic experience, they don't want to think about it, or they think it'd be faster to, you know, especially children going to school, faster to either buy some property nearby or move to, you know, nearby places, if not too far. I'm in the middle of the destruction. So we are concerned when they remove the debris, how toxic the air or the water would be. I'm personally looking for a place where I can, even though my house is okay, you know, those are a few questions. And it has happened on such a big scale that I don't know what is the safe limit. You know, it's Petaluma, Ronald Park, a safe limit. Is Rincon Valley a safe limit from Fountain Grove area?
You're a physician. Would you stay working there as a physician?
You know, right now, me and my wife, she's a doctor at Kaiser here. Other than our attachment to our panel of patients and the clinical staff, it's a concern about children. I have 3 daughters, One is a junior in Maria Carrillo. Other is a freshman. One goes to the elementary school. It's more about what it would be difficult for them to adjust at a new place and a new school. They don't want to lose their friends. They want to have different teachers at this stage after going through this experience. Mm. So that's the big thing on our mind.
Yes, yes. You're really illuminating what are sort of the questions people are asking themselves, and also what Pastor Flowers is saying about people trying to determine whether or not they have the strength to rebuild. Amy writes, I'd like to express how much my Zen practice has allowed me to feel all my feelings and held me during this time. My family of four was evacuated for 11 days, and our home was threatened by fire from the north, east, and south. I felt fatigue, fear, anxiety, and joy at the friendship that held us while we sheltered. I was scared to return to and continue to be scared in my wildfire-prone rural home. These feelings are all real, all okay, and in articulating them over the course of the disaster, I found a way to be of service. Permission to be real is a gift, and it is a gift that Zen has given me. She really is echoing what you were saying earlier, Rachel Bouton, about allowing people to have their own experiences. One of the things that I thought was interesting that you wrote about was when you went back to your home. So first, when you were leaving your home to evacuate, you thought, this is all I need, just these few things, and you took off. But that when you went back to the home and you saw everything in there, that you realized how deeply you loved all of your things.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I'm reaching an age. I'm 56, so not that old, but I do look around and think, God, I've got a lot of stuff. You know, 56 years is plenty to accumulate. But it was a surprise when I walked in and it wasn't all gone, how much I cared about it. And the things of the world, it's easy to pass them off as oh, it's just the material world. But the material world holds a lot of our heart and soul in it. And so I came to a deeper appreciation, as well as the desire to clean up my house and get rid of stuff that I didn't feel connected to. So that was, it's been good, and not just cleaning the house, but cleaning house in other sort of internal ways.
Rabbi Gittleman, how are you doing 3 weeks out from this?
You know, I have my good and bad days, and even in the course of the day, I do kind of run up and down. I think most of us are still a little traumatized. Like, if a siren goes off for any reason, we tend to jump. Any smell of smoke of any kind can really heighten my or our anxiety. We're on the same time trying to get back to normal. We opened up a free day camp since schools were closed 2 days after the fire, and that just ended Tuesday. And since the kids couldn't go outside because of the air, they were inside. So that meant that I was displaced from my home, but also the synagogue. It was great having all these kids. We had like 130 kids. And also we offered free lunch every day to the kids and also anyone else who was here. So the synagogue became an evacuation center to some degree. And that was really worthwhile. But it wasn't normal life for any of us. So I'm just in the process of the camp is now over because schools are mostly back. We're not offering the free lunches anymore, and we're slowly cleaning the synagogue up and slowly trying to get back to life as normal. But frankly, it's not normal. I love the countryside and the wilderness here. I've been here 22 years, and I'm just beginning to take in what the fires took, both in terms of houses, neighborhoods. This morning I met with a member of the synagogue and a close friend just to be in his neighborhood with him. His house is like the only house standing. And it's traumatizing and sad and hard, and I certainly feel it.
Yes. What have you been doing in terms of self-care?
Well, even during the fires, when they were active, I tried to get to the gym like one time. So having been in service work for so long, I've just learned that I'll break if I don't take care of myself. So I go to the gym. I go for walks. I try to run out to the beach or just get some time to be quiet. I also meditate and pray. I think we're all stretched a little thin. We can use some kind of a real break, but I'm doing okay.
Yeah, but I think your point about, you know, if you don't take care of yourself, you do break, and to remember to do those types of things. Well, we've got Susan on the line from San Mateo. Hi, Susan.
Hi. First of all, I want to extend my deepest heartfelt sympathy to all of those who lost or just all of those who experienced the fire. Number two, I wanted to ask for recommendations of where social workers, teachers who could spare a week or two to come up can help. As teacher's aides, whatever is needed. I am retired, and I have the degrees, and I'm very willing to go out there. And the Red Cross has told me several times send gift cards from Target, which I have done. So I just want to put that out, and if you have any info to offer, it could be said sometime in the day. And the other thing I really want to mention is people have called in who have lost their homes in other places. I would like people to remember the survivors of the Holocaust, because I worked so hard with many of them. I've listened to their stories. These are people who not only lost their homes, lost their possessions, but were sent to Auschwitz and other concentration camps and survived due to their resilience and their desire to return to life as normal, and to just hold that thought that if they can do it, you can do it.
Well, Susan, thank you so much. Susan says she is willing to volunteer, do what she can. Among you, is there something that you can think of that could use Susan's services? Pastor Flowers, perhaps?
I can't think of anything at present. In fact, that's been one of the biggest challenges. Dozens and dozens of churches and individuals have been calling, asking, can we come? Can we work? Can we help? And we're not there yet. We're not at a place where we're just emerging from the crisis mode and trying to move toward a recovery mode. And schools are not even back in session, all of them. So until we get to some kind of an assessment of what needs are, then it's hard to say something specific, to my knowledge.
Rachel Boughton?
One of my Zen students is a psychologist at the health center at Sonoma State, and he was saying sort of the same thing, that they kept the center open, but the only patients essentially were the other staff, because it really is people are taking this time to deal with it internally, and I think the time will come for that, but I think we're not there yet. So if you can hold that thought and remember in a month or so to find out, I think there may be also more. We will have had time to regroup and create situations where people can help.
Well, thanks, Susan, for the call. Jorge writes, representatives from Zen, Sikhs, and Jewish faiths, but no Catholic representation on this panel. A very large percentage of the Santa Rosa population is Catholic. Mission San Francisco Solano was established at Sonoma in 1823 by Father Jose Altamira, which marked the official foundation of the church in what would have become the Catholic Diocese of Santa Rosa. I believe I'm reading that correctly. Why no Catholics representative? And I appreciate Jorge's comment and do want to mention that our producers actually did reach out to several faiths, including Catholics, and it was just a matter of schedule or people who were, you know, trying to get schools back up and running. And so it was just we were unable to get somebody who could make the time. But of course, thank you for sharing your church in Santa Rosa as well and letting us know about it. I guess in terms of just looking ahead, Rachel Boughton, I want to ask you about a comment you made. You said, now we're the fire. And in some ways, I can feel that myself. And in some ways, you were mentioning that in relation to what anger or blame people might feel around this.
Yeah, I think we can feel. So we've seen all these images. Some of us were actually there for them. Other, you know, for me, it was a fire on the ridge and some flames in the mid-distance, but we've all seen the pictures and the videos. And we can feel it inside ourselves, and I can feel that my temper is edgy, that I tend to, you know, be going along on a nice sunny day and remember old resentments. So there is a sense that the fire energy is in us, and I think we can acknowledge that and also be patient with it. and be patient with our interactions with our spouses and our partners and our friends when they go a little funky, because it's the fire, and we all, you know, we learned something. We learned the power of that. But there's a tendency, I think, control. We, as humans, we love to feel we can be in control, and when we can't, sometimes we look for someone to blame, because at least then we have a reason, that at least then we can hold on to some control. And I think we can again take a breath and pay attention and breathe the air, which is clean now, and have a cup of coffee and, you know, have the life we have.
Well, that reminds me of this last comment from Tom, who writes, I lost loved ones due to accidents. In my grief, I wonder about people not given the time nor space to mourn. Robbed of their own grief, they are in perpetual loss. We just have seconds left, but if there's anyone who wants to comment on Tom's point.
You know, I would say something else, and that is that for me it was important to say that God's not in the fire, but in the way people respond to the fire.
Mm.
And certainly felt God's presence in the overwhelming support we've received from so many people.
Rabbi George Gittleman, thank you for joining us this morning. And
thank you for having us.
And Rachel Boughton, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Rachel Boughton of the Santa Rosa Creek Zen Center, and Mandeep Nagra of the Sikh Temple of Santa Rosa, thank you to you as well.
Thank you.
And Dale Flowers, pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Rosa, thank you.
Thank you, Mina.
To all our listeners, we appreciate you listening, and have a good weekend. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.